Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, David Byrd. Is there someone in your office that's hard to get along with? Is it maybe your boss? Could it be you? Well, this week we'll talk to the co-author of a new book about getting along with difficult people at work.
Anytime you put any two people together, you have the potential to have a conflict. It comes in endless shapes and sizes. It can be anywhere and everywhere, anytime we interact.
The Schmuck in My Office, this week on American Cafe. U.S. government statistics show that the average American works about 34.5 hours a week in 2017. That varies, though, from industry to industry, with some folks averaging nearly 45 hours a week, and that doesn't include overtime. Compared to other countries, the U.S. is about in the middle as far as worked hours per year, but we do spend a significant amount of our lives working together. And sometimes the folks we work with can make working more difficult. But how do you get along with or handle difficult people? To find out, I spoke with Dr. Jody Foster. She's a clinical professor of psychiatry in the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also the co-author of The Schmuck in My Office, How to Deal Effectively with Difficult People at Work. Let's start off defining how you define a difficult person at work. We'll call them the workplace schmuck because that's the title of your book. How do you define somebody who is a difficult person? What are their characteristics?
They come in a million shapes and sizes, but I generally define this as somebody who is upsetting, vexing, or otherwise interfering with other people's workday.
Now, you list several types of difficult workplace personalities, the narcissist, the Venus flytrap, the robot. Let's go through a couple of these. Who would you describe as the narcissist?
So the narcissist would be the entitled, self-centered, condescending, attention-seeking person in the office who sort of fills the room with his or her ego, inflates his own sense of self-worth, overestimates abilities, blames others for shortcomings, that type of person.
What about the Venus flytrap?
The Venus flytrap is a highly seductive and appealing character, but what one doesn't realize up front is that their relationships tend to be very intense and very unstable, and there's a cycle of overvaluing you and putting you on a pedestal and then flipping to devalue you. So there's a real push-pull to these relationships and a real stickiness, and in the office, people basically walk on eggshells around this person for fear of setting them off.
Now, these kind of personalities contribute to an overall toxic environment in any workplace. What are some steps that, let's start as a manager. Let's say I'm a manager of a company and I have one of these personality types in my workforce. What are the things that people should do and what's the timetable look like?
Well, so there are conflicts in the moment, and then there is just the conundrum of working on a day-to-day basis with a difficult person, you know, outside of an acute event. And so there are different strategies. As you mentioned, the book is divided into 10 types because having done for many years now consultations on interpersonal conflicts at work, my observation has been that the types of people who get into interpersonal trouble tend to fall into these 10 basic buckets. So there are specific strategies for each kind, but from a general standpoint and a managerial standpoint, an important thing is to accept that people don't set out to be disruptive. People don't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to, you know, cause chaos at my workplace today. And so when you sort of take that malice out of it and start to take a step back and try to look at what is driving the particular person to act in the particular way, it's going to be very helpful to develop an empathic posture and figure out how to deal with them. It's incredibly important as a manager to lay out the rules of engagement, because so many times people who are acting badly, when they are confronted or made aware of their behavior and that it's rubbing up negatively against the organization, they are shocked and surprised and they self-correct. So it's really important to intervene early. It's important to be concise and direct with what you have to say so that people can actually hear what you're saying. But like I said, laying out the sandbox for people to play in is very important.
I'm an employee. Let's say my boss is the office schmuck. As an employee, what do you do?
A boss is a person just like anyone else. An interaction with a boss is the same as an interaction with anyone else. And if the boss is behaving badly, the boss should be made aware of it as well. And a rejoinder is going to be, I can't do that. I can't say that to my boss. I need my job. I'm in a subordinate position. And of course, you always have to gauge each situation for the viability of being able to do this. But I will tell you from my personal experience and from observing this over and over again, that the person who's able to go to his boss and say, you know, I understand what you are trying to convey to me, but the way you're doing it, the way you raise your voice, the way you do it in public and embarrass me, it affects my ability to be as productive and as engaged in my work as I could be just because you're doing it this way. You'd be surprised how many times the boss will, I mean, there are certainly going to be some who are just going to be defensive, but there are going to be others who didn't know that, didn't realize it, and are going to respect you more for calling it out. If you're only met with defensiveness and, you know, you walk away from such an interaction thinking that you screwed up and you've completely failed, I still would suggest that you give it a little time because you've delivered the message, oftentimes people hear it, and although they may react with defensiveness right up front, they may actually internalize it and their behavior may change a bit. But if you're truly in a workplace where you cannot give feedback and you cannot get around abusive or disruptive boss, and you use the structure of the office, like, for example, the Human Resource Department or the Office of General Counsel, whatever it may be, and you can't get out from under this, then sometimes you have to decide whether you really want to be at this place.
Now, what effect does the so-called open concept of office, for lack of a better way, feng shui, office construction, have on this? Because I've seen articles where, you know, the open concept is not such a great idea anymore.
I've seen that too.
Does that affect this kind of behavior? Would somebody who is normally a nice person suddenly turn into an office schmuck because they're working in a bad environment?
So, you know, people always put under stress, under duress, people revert to their less appealing characteristics. I don't know necessarily that, you know, one environment versus another, or, you know, working from home and only engaging with people by email or text, all these things are opportunities for conflict. Because, I mean, the fact is that anytime you put any two people together, you have the potential to have a conflict. It comes in endless shapes and sizes. It can be anywhere and everywhere, anytime we interact. So yeah, if there's an open concept, and, you know, thinking of, atoms bumping against each other, the more opportunity we have to interact and bump against people, the more potential we do have to have conflict. That's true.
Now, I haven't asked the final question. There's an old joke where if you look around for the office schmuck and you can't determine who it is, it's you. What do you do if suddenly somebody comes to you and says, hey, you're it. You're the guy who's causing the conflict. What do you do within yourself?
Well, the first thing you do is make sure that this person isn't coming and saying this to you because of, you know, something about them. In other words, you need to be sure that there's some verity to what they're saying. That said, if somebody is giving you feedback and you have any recognition of it, then you can probably assume that it is causing some kind of difficulty. When something like that happens, it would be wonderful if people could just listen to it in a balanced way without too much defensiveness and use it as a roadmap or a nice arrow pointing to the areas where you need to improve and see it as an opportunity. I mean, the fact is that the last chapter in my book is called Am I the Schmuck in My Office? And what I say is that if in workplace after workplace, everyone around you is wrong, everyone around you is an idiot or a jerk or a schmuck, and you're the only one who does it right, then at some point you're going to need to notice that you're the common denominator here and get the mirror and take a look at yourself. But like I said, if we could all sort of absorb this as an opportunity for improvement, we would do a lot better than just kind of getting angry or pushing back against it.
That's Dr. Jody Foster. She co-authored the book with Dr. Michelle Joy. So, do you have an office schmuck? How do you deal with difficult people? Let me know by commenting on our Facebook page. That's VOA American Cafe. Until next time, I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thanks for listening.